You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 16th of January, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RustJournal.org. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing?
I don't know if you saw, but that CNN headquarters, there was a long line out the front door, and my understanding is that they're holding auditions for their they have an open slot for the Mikhail Mishustin expert category. So they're holding auditions for that now, and you have people from all over Hollywood coming in there, putting in their headshots and everything else to be trotted out as experts in this guy over the next few months. So I don't know. I don't know who's going to get it. If they're going to get a Golden Globe for this or what? But I don't know.
And it's going a little bit above my head there, Matt. I was thinking Q's outside of CNN. I hope they're going in there to lose their jobs possibly because they're not making enough money because the alternative media is constantly trouncing them. But no, I guess you must be talking about something else there. Do you want to just let me know what it is? Let me in on the joke here?
Well, yeah. There's a new prime minister in Russia, Mikhail Mishustin.
That's where I've heard the name. That's where I've heard
the name. I only heard of him last year. Yeah, everyone at CNN has never heard of him at all. And so they're holding auditions for experts in this guy because they're going to be trotting out these people who don't know anything. And of course, you know, Johnson's Law, the most significant social science discovery of the last 20 years, is going to be all over the place. So that's it. So, you know, if you were a Russia scholar, it would be hilarious.
He seems pretty good to me, actually. I've seen a little bit of an interview with him, and he's revolutionized the way they collect tax over there, apparently, by setting it up on social media so people can do it on their smartphones. And he's going to be the new prime minister. But we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here because we are referring to Putin's presidential address to the Federal Assembly, which it took place yesterday morning, I think, and I happened to just chance across it while it was live on RT at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was absolutely amazed at what he was talking about, absolutely amazed and really, really pleased to hear what he's saying. And there's been very little mention of it in the mainstream media because all they've been talking about is the fact that the government are dissolving and there's going to be some changes to the constitution. But that's really not that relevant to us. What is relevant to us is the demographics of Russia. And just before I start talking about that, just another observation that I made. There were maybe a couple of thousand people there. It was all the upper house of the Duma, all the lower house of the Duma, all the federal lawmakers, and every single face was white. Every single one of them. You know, that is how an ethnostate should be run. That's how a country can be run and succeed, basically. So everyone he was talking to was white. The first subject that he came to, so it's obviously the most important one, was demographics. Demographics is the most important issue in Russia, according to Putin. And he pointed out that since 2000, when he spoke about the demographic problem and introduced measures to try and improve the Russian birth rate, there has been an increase, but it's not enough. He wants to have 1.7 by 2025, and 1.7 is the minimum that's required to replace the births in the country. I think Britain's at about 1.3. Every European country is well below 1.7. Hungary have taken steps to improve this. Putin thinks he's going to get it up to 1.7 by 2025. And he pointed out that there were actually less births in the 1990s than there were during the war. So whatever the Soviets did to Russia, part of it was preventing them from wanting to have children. I think it was down at about 1.1. I mean, really, really low.
I want to interrupt just for a second and yet again offer my services to Russia to assist them in the demographic crisis. They are doing better on it, but, you know, I have two kids. You know, I want to sacrifice myself for the Russian cause. I can go over there. I could assist them in whatever way they need in making more children. Just in case someone over there hears me, they can give me a call.
Well, Putin's got a different idea, actually. And of course, it's not, well, why don't we just import lots of people from elsewhere to replace the Russians, which seems to be Western Europe's idea of how to deal with the demographic problem. Just replace the people that we have actually got left with people from the third world, which, of course, is just going to ruin the country. Putin's idea is to increase the finances of the people that are producing the children. What a novel idea. And this is a direct quote of what he actually said. And you might need to follow it carefully because it's a bit complicated, and we'll discuss it when we get to the end of what he actually said. He said, according to various estimates, roughly 70 to 80% of low-income families are families with children. You are well aware of this. It often happens that even when not one, but both parents work, the income of such a family is still very modest. What decisions have already been made? From January 2020, families with incomes below two subsistence minimums per person will receive monthly benefits for their first and second child. Moreover, these benefits will be paid until the child reaches the age of three, rather than 18 months as was the case before. The benefit amount will depend on the subsistence minimum in a specific region. The nationwide average is over 11,000 rubles per child per month. Once again, this is an average and depends on the specific region. Additionally, with the support of the federal budget, we have started paying benefits for the third child and subsequent children in 75 constituent entities, now including all the regions in the Urals, Siberia, and the Far East. All of this amounts to substantial support, but the following thought has crossed my mind, and I believe that you also realise this. Parents stop receiving payments when their child turns three, and this means that their family can immediately face financial problems. To be honest, this is happening already. We must prevent this, especially since I realise that mothers often find it hard to combine working and caring for their children before they start school. Back in 2006, I said the following in my address to the Federal Assembly. And now for the most important matter, indeed, what I want to talk about is love. It was then that I proposed launching the Maternity Capital Programme aimed at helping the families that decided to have their second child. This programme will expire on December 31st, 2021. I know that many people wonder what the state will do after that. We will extend this programme to December 31st, 2026 at the least. We must do this without fail, but this measure is no longer enough. We must support young people who are starting their families and, I am sure, dreaming about having children. In this sense, I would like to introduce additional decisions concerning the maternity capital, which should also come into effect on January 1st, 2020. Even when the first child is born, the family will have the right to the full amount of the maternity capital, which is 466,617 rubles, after the indexation in January 2020. This is the sum that was paid when the second or the next child was born. This support will give families a chance to prepare for the birth of their second child. And he went on to say that after the age of three, the support is going to continue because he didn't actually want the mothers working. He said that when the mothers are working, they have to come home because the child is sick. And it's quite clear that he wanted mothers to be paid, basically, and they're going to continue paying them for as many children as possible. Basically, this is his idea. Now, how much is this that they're actually getting, Matt? Is this similar to the sort of amount that people would get through wages if they were working?
Well, 466,000 rubles is maybe $7,500. But it doesn't matter, because when you have an economy that's far more rational than the American, it's simply worth a lot more, and it goes a longer way. Russians, especially in rural areas, are far more self-sufficient than Americans are. Not to mention the fact that you have a communal society that still exists in many places, where you have a lot of self-help and barter and things like that. So the purely economic statistics are, you know, they're in most cases better than America, but they should be supplemented by these other things. You know, Russia is one of the most stable economies in the world. You know, there's really no debt. There's a budget surplus. They now have hit, they're $500 billion in gold that they've invested and brought into the country. We talked about the maternity capital program on this show before, where they have this massive investment in, and this is over time. This is, you know, more than that for each child, and then to prepare for the next one, to make, you know, not just to make it easier for families to have kids, but to have the woman stay home. You stole what I was going to say. I was going to mention this, is that it's not a good idea. Just like in America, the poverty rate is based on family breakdown. One thing that Putin did do, although not enough, was make it harder to get a divorce. But that still has a long way to go in Russia. It's actually a serious problem, which of course was created in America. But divorce has everything. That's why he mentions love. Divorce has everything to do with poverty, has everything to do with crime, everything to do with social breakdown. So, you know, this is what happens when you don't have 800 military bases to finance. This is what happens when you don't have private capital running your banks. This is what happens, or your central bank. This is what happens when you have an actual representative system. You could actually invest in people like this. I've said this a trillion times. I'll say it a trillion times more. Putin is more powerful than the economic elites in Russia. Therefore, he could talk like this. And I want to say something else. When he talks about demographics, he's talking about Russians. There's a very, very nuanced distinction between people who live in Russia and ethnic Russians. And he goes back and forth on this because he has to be very careful. But he's talking about ethnic Russians as much as he's talking about people who live within the Federation. And that's kind of a very subtle thing that he throws around. He's talking about, as you mentioned, an ethnostate in more ways than one. So this is a big deal. Of course, it's been a crisis since the collapse of the USSR.
Well, I noticed as I was looking for an image for this, they actually give out awards to families as well. And there's all these pictures of Putin with these large families. And what are you saying there, Matt, that they invest a load of money for each child so that there is money that is made from that investment that then goes to the child as well as them paying out benefit to the family?
Yeah, exactly. It's no different than the you know, to have more children means to have more taxpayers and soldiers and workers in the future. If you make it harder to have kids, you actually lose in the long run. So this gets kind of indexed to what these children may earn in a rational economy in the future. So it's not just a negative tax break, but it's also a subsidy, and as well as a directed investment. And we talked about this either last year or the year before on this program in detail. I don't remember every little thing about it, but we were very impressed by it, and we talked for a long time about it, and this is why the demographic crisis is now over, despite me not having gone over there.
Well, I find it very, very encouraging that there's a leader of a country that realizes that the real value of the country is in its people, and tries to increase the people and makes that the number one issue first. And then realizes that because of that, the economy will increase instead of doing it the other way around. Well, he continued, he said, "But I believe that this is still not enough in today's conditions, considering the demographic challenges Russia is facing. We can and must do even more. I suggest increasing the maternity capital by a further 150,000 rubles. Families will have the right to this additional money for the maternity capital when their second child is born. This means that the total amount of the maternity capital for a family with two children will amount to 616,617 rubles. It will be indexed annually in the future. At the same time, I believe that if a family already has a child, we must provide the new increased maternity capital when the second child is born. which is, as I have already said, 616,617 rubles. Let me add that we have already made this decision that when the third child is born, the government pays 450,000 rubles towards the family's mortgage loan. This means that overall, a family with three children will be able to invest over 1 million rubles to solve their housing problems with the help of the government. In many regions, cities, and even regional capitals, this amounts to almost half the cost of a house or a flat. I mean, that's amazing, isn't it? Imagine that, a young family in the West, in Britain or America, and the government is going to pay half the cost of a house for you to encourage you to have children. And you think of how much money goes out every month on the mortgage. And half of it's already gone. Government's going to pay for it. It's so positive.
And this is what happens when you have a rational system. The family capital system, and it's about large families because it applies to a second and third child and then on. It's exempt from the income tax. It's granted once, although possibly in installments. And it can only be spent on, as we mentioned, getting a house, the initial like a down payment, any kind of construction cost, it can also education, you know, any kind of accommodation, any educational institution whatsoever. And there's also special monies for children with physical disabilities. So you could apply for it 3 years since the birth of the second, third child or more. And it comes down to, you know, simply building a family, making it possible for to have one wage earner, to have the family stay together. And this is, you know, it's the complete opposite of the system in America. And you know, the best part of it, it's not really – this isn't welfare in the sense we use the term. This is an investment because, of course, you're going to get this money back. This is investing in people. The stronger the family, the healthier the society. The healthier society, the better the economy, the better people think and act. They're going to get all this money back. And yes, you're right. They have awards. They have medals. It's like they've done this, and they did it in the Third Reich. They did it all over the place to build the economy after the population after a disaster. You see, compare that to Ceausescu's Romania, where he just, you know, banned abortions and contraception, you know, and thinking that would do it. Forgetting that, you know, you have to have the infrastructure there and the mentality and the communitarian idea, not just the money. But now Russia has the money. Russia has the future. Russia has a confidence in the future that you don't have in the West whatsoever. So although 466,000 rubles isn't impressive in America, it is in Russia.
Well, that's going to be a huge weight lifted off the parents' shoulders, having that much of the mortgage paid. He also says, let me also remind you that a reduced mortgage interest rate, 6% per year, for families with two or more children, has been extended for the entire time of the loan, which resulted in the number of people using this support measure growing almost tenfold at once. A social program for young families has been launched in the Far East, mortgage loans at 2% interest rate. I ask the banks, and not just the banks with state capital, to become more actively involved in its implementation. Now, I don't know much about mortgage interest rates, Matt. How does this compare, a 6% interest rate in one part and a 2% interest rate in the other? Is that how does that compare to the West's interest rates on mortgages?
Well, we all know the massive crisis and crash in the U.S. in 1998. The only thing that the Americans can do is subsidize a homeowner. Because you don't have private control over the central bank, and the Putin-China deal fixed that problem, he actually can talk about interest rates. There's no way that an American president can say it's going to be this percentage and that percentage. That's up to bankers. Only in a place like Russia or China or Libya, Gaddafi, Belarus, any of these places, can a president talk about interest rates. The state would have absolutely no control over mortgage rates. In the U.S., of course, it's usually a variable rate loans. I think something like 30% at least of mortgages are underwater. Repossessions are still a massive crisis. in this country. Interest rates are pretty low here, but no, you know, simply, and now you have the same problems that you had in the 1990s in America. You have risky loans, people getting mortgages that have no right to get them. You know, this is what happens when you have this buccaneer capital. You have these scammers running the banks. This is completely different. There's no comparison here. Families have to stay together. They have this capital behind them. They have a far superior economy, far more opportunities than you would have in the U.S. And you have interest rates based on the number of kids. If that's not national socialism, that's the core of it as far as family policy is concerned. That's absolutely essential. But the state can't say that in any other country but Russia and Belarus, a few places like that, which proves that the state has control over banking rather than the other way around, like you have in the U.S. That's the big takeaway here.
It's certainly very, very similar to the Third Reich's subsidization of families and giving them all the cost of the whole house paid for on the fourth child, I think it was, and 25% of the house paid for with each child. But it wasn't just about economics that he spoke about. He said it is very important that children adopt the true values of a large family. That family is love, happiness, the joy of motherhood and fatherhood. That family is a strong bond of several generations, united by respect for the elderly and care for children, giving everyone a sense of confidence, security, and reliability. And, you know, 10, 20 years ago, you never would have thought that would be, you know, a very revolutionary thing to say, the true values of a large family, and speak about motherhood and fatherhood and a bond of several generations. But today we're being told that two men and a child that they have adopted is a family. We're told to be against our elder generation. We're encouraged to mock the boomers and blame them for things. And what we've got here is saying children need to be taught the values of each generation, and they need to be a tight-knit family. And, you know, with this no-fault divorce and people just get split up now and so many single mothers and broken homes, you know, this is just music to my ears to hear that, you know, the leader of a massive country, a world power like Russia, that he's talking about this, you know, that family is love and happiness, the joy of motherhood and fatherhood. You know, that's what life is about. And not economics, but the economics put things in place for this. You know, it's like the economic system is in place so that they can do these things. The economy is working for the people, not the people working for the economy. What do you make of this bit, Matt?
We've been talking about that on this show for a very long time. My own show, my own writings, this show, this does have an economic aspect to it. And it's one of the things that you see in continental Europe that you don't see in the Anglo-American world, that without strong families, you don't have strong economies. Without strong families, you don't have rational people. There's Paul Witz's book, The Faith of the Fatherless. Religious belief and understanding is directly correlated to whether or not there's a strong, respected father figure in the home. This is part of natural law. There's no denying this. It's taken for granted in parts of Europe, but certainly not in the U.S. When you don't have confidence in the future, you aren't going to build anything. You aren't going to make anything. But this confidence is built not only in a rational economy and political system, but in a strong family, especially the extended family. And I think the next thing that has to happen, I'm not up on this at the moment, but divorce laws have to be, they're not as bad as they are in America, but they're close. And divorce has to be made more difficult to get and more expensive. It doesn't favor the female as badly as it does in America, because that's not physically possible. But that has to be the next thing. It's foggy as to whether or not broken families can get the maternity thing. I mean, single mothers can get it. But I think there has to be limitations on that. That has to be the next thing. When divorce is easy to get, the society falls apart like you have in this country. And it was Ronald Reagan who signed the first no-fault divorce law as governor of California. It's an absolute disaster. But Putin realizes that this is just a political and an economic issue. Love isn't just some ethereal feeling. It's essential. You can't have a society without it. Nationalism is based on this affection we have for people because we have the same history. This is exactly what he's talking about. That starts in the family. Without the family, you have absolutely nothing.
The nation is an extension of the family, isn't it? I mean, this is why they attacked the family after the Second World War with cultural Marxism in the fascist personality, and tried to say that the father's role in the home was the start of fascism. So we need to attack the family and encourage single mothers. And this is the opposite of that. I mean, this is all aimed at families that stay together, rather than rewarding single mothers. He continued, he said, the consistent work of the government and the Bank of Russia has led to a stabilization of prices. Last year, inflation stood at 3%, which is below the target level of 4%. True, the prices of certain goods and services have risen slightly, but overall, I repeat, inflation is at a predictably low level. The situation fundamentally differs from what it was 5 or 10 years ago, when double-digit inflation was a tax on all citizens of the country, being an especially hard burden for those on a fixed salary or pension, retired people, and workers in the public sector. So the state must honour its social responsibility under any conditions throughout the country. Therefore, I believe that the Constitution should include a provision that the minimum wage in Russia must not be below the subsistence minimum of the economically active people. We have a law on this, but we should formalise this requirement in the Constitution, along with the principles of decent pensions, which implies a regular adjustment of pensions according to inflation. So what he's saying here, Matt, he's going to put the minimum wage up, he's going to increase the pensions. What's the importance of this with the inflation rate that's going down instead of being in double digits? Is that defeating the sanctions, is it?
Well, remember, all of this is going on while Russia is allegedly under these harsh sanctions from the West, showing how meaningless these sanctions are. You know, the Silk Road in China is coming up to $2 trillion a year in trade, and Russia's at the center of this. Russia is in excellent macroeconomic shape, but the ratings agencies in New York City still have them at BBB rating, showing you just how political they are. But investment from China and elsewhere is pouring into Russia. In fact, dividends in Russian companies are going up. I think it's brilliant to index the minimum wage to how much it costs to live. There shouldn't just simply be one figure. They have to figure out how much it costs to have a normal life and then connect the wage to that. I also had the idea of, wages have to be connected to worker productivity as well. But there's a connection between those two things too. So that's actually a pretty brilliant thing. In America, the inflation rate is far higher than is reported. Paul Craig Roberts has been brilliant on this. Prices are going up far higher. If you trace the prices of milk and eggs and stuff like that over the last few years, they're going up very high. The inflation's far higher than we realize. That's been brought down. Again, this is what happens when the state has control over banks rather than the other way around. This is what happens when nationalism and the dominance of the state, the legitimate state, is imposed on the economy rather than the other way around. Because there's one option or the other. There's no balance. Either the state rules, the nation rules, or the corporations rule. And in America, we have the oligarchy. In Russia, we have the nation. And this is the result under sanctions.
Well, they're all nationalist policies. But I do like this next bit where he seems to be preempting the UN. He says, "I truly believe that it is time to introduce certain changes to our country's main law, changes that will directly guarantee the priority of the Russian constitution in our legal framework. What does it mean? It means literally the following. Requirements of international law and treaties, as well as decisions of international bodies, can be valid on the Russian territory only to the point that they do not restrict the rights and freedoms of our people and citizens and do not contradict our constitution." So I guess what he's pointing out there is, if the UN decides that the whole world has got to go along with sodomy and teach it to children, not so in Russia. They're going to preempt that by saying that anything that it infringes upon the rights and freedoms of the Russian people, they don't have to go along with. Am I correct in thinking this?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I thought this was always the case. This has been the case at least in the last 15 years. But what he's saying here, it needs to be a part of the Constitution. Because even in the U.S., you know, if the Senate ratifies a treaty, that becomes law in the U.S. What he's saying is that, this, you know, we sign a treaty, it's only valid to the extent that our way of life isn't harmed. So he's talking to the EU. He's talking to institutions like this. This is a principle that's the foundation of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Silk Road Initiative. That's what the foundation of this is. You know, this has been the case in Russia for a while, but he wants it to be explicit and treaties to you know, take that into consideration.
So he's tightening that up. And finally, he appears to be excluding Israelis from joining the Russian parliament. He says, second, I suggest formalizing at the constitutional level the obligatory requirements for those who hold positions of critical significance for national security and sovereignty. More precisely, the heads of the constituent entities, members of the Federation Council, State Duma deputies, the Prime Minister and his or her deputies, federal ministers, heads of federal agencies and judges should have no foreign citizenship or a residence permit or any other document that allows them to live permanently in a foreign state. I mean, that's fantastic, that is. I mean, that's just Syria has the same, I think. What do you make of this bit, Matt?
Oh, you're right. That's exactly what it is. All the oligarchs used to have full Israeli citizenship. Some have a UK citizenship. He even wants to ban, you know, time spent, I mean, outside of students, of course, or military service, too much time spent abroad. You have to live in Russia. You have to be Russian. You have to be a part of Russian life if you want to be a part of the Russian political system. And this is not getting much play so far in the West right now, but he's putting it in a very subtle way. But this is a very, very powerful statement. And anti-Zionist, there's no question about it. That's exactly who he's talking about here.
Well, it means they're not able to just escape to Israel if they get caught committing crimes. So that's a fantastic speech from Putin this year. He always does well, but I think that's probably the best that I've seen him do yet, talking directly about demographics like that. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.